Good afternoon, Jamie.
Keithtronics. What's happening, man?
Oh, not too much. We're recording at a weird time, but it's been a little over two weeks. It's lunchtime, so I'm feeling pretty good. I already ate, so I'm not hungry. Oh. Didn't want you to meet hangry, Keith.
You came prepared.
I did come prepared.
That's cool. I didn't eat. I'm a late eater.
Ah, gotcha. We actually have stuff to talk about today, don't we?
I hope so. I do.
Yeah. I prevented you from telling me about something earlier in the week because I was like, we'll just do it on the podcast. So it's authentic.
Do it at lunchtime.
Exactly.
So what's been going on, man, in your side of things?
I guess, yeah, on my side of the chronic space here, actually accomplished some things. We finally got the notary build to actually work with the Mac app, which I have no idea why. Like, it apparently just takes some time between us signing any new change documents that they have and it actually working, because I ran a build right after we had both made sure that all of the documents had been signed, or, you know, whatever, the agreements had been agreed to, and it failed with the exact same error that it had previously been giving me. So I was like, well, I think we're stuck. But then I just sat on it for a day and I just rebuild it the next day and it worked out just fine. And I was able to drop a dot app to you and you were able to run it, and it felt super good to actually get it to not give you an error.
So you needed this is for the developer ID, correct?
Yeah. So this is the one I probably care about this a little bit too much. I don't think our app is going to have anything in it that would prevent it from being distributable through the Mac App Store.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always the downside of, like, eventually this thing will have a subscription model to it, right? With your paying. So mm-hmm. if we give people the ability to pay for a subscription through the Mac App Store, then Apple takes 30% of the subscription, and that sucks. So I would rather have the opportunity to distribute it by ourselves so that nobody has to take any more of a cut than what we would pay, whatever our credit card processor is. And mm-hmm. that just seems like a better deal for us. So to do this on a Mac nowadays, there's all the stuff in place with Gatekeeper and the security APIs. And to get it to where it doesn't say, are you sure this isn't a hacker that's given you some stuff? You basically have to send it off to Apple and they notarize it for you to say, hey, they're not doing anything shady. And then you don't have to go through your security preferences and be like, no, seriously, I know these guys aren't bad. Please run the application. It'll still give you the thing that says, hey, you downloaded this from the internet. But that's just saying that, hey, I know you downloaded this.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to run it? It won't give you any more security promptings after that. It'll give you things where, and this becomes blatantly obvious if you've messed with Catalina at all, where anytime we need to interact with anything, it's going to prompt and be like, hey, Chronic wants to use your downloads folder. Is that okay? That sucks. There's no getting around that, really, if we want to be a notarized app. So yeah, but that's what this did. This gives it to where the application seems more authentic when running on a Mac, so that people don't have those kind of security worries. I don't even know if people do. I think most people are just like, yes, I downloaded this thing. Please go, God. Yeah, I still wanted that to be something that our application would handle, and spent way too much time trying to get it to do so.
Yeah, we could have kicked the can down the street, right, and worried about this later, but we kind of wanted this experience once we start releasing this to other people, so that they don't have to say, hey, yeah, I trust these people.
Exactly.
And in the background, like, what you need to do on Apple side is kind of crazy. Like, we need to have a bank account set up, which, to be honest, we don't. Like, we're just using, I think, Brilliant Fantastic's business bank account. We're using Brilliant Fantastic's LLC. So you need to have your business papers in line. With Apple, you need a bunch of business papers, and that kind of sucks, but we're just kind of temporarily using Brilliant Fantastic right now, but eventually we'll come up with our own company name and LLC and all that jazz. So this is probably something that, like, people that didn't have this set up, you'd probably want to kick this down the street a little bit, but
yeah, exactly. If you didn't already have all of your stuff set up inside of Apple, then we would have definitely just punted on this, and we would, I would just,
you also need to pay the $99. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they must have, like, humans involved or something, like, to say, hey, everything, like, they signed and read everything, or else I don't know what the delay would be, you know?
Well, it could just be eventually consistent.
Right.
You're running into the MongoDB problem now, where whatever application we were hitting was touching a database node that hadn't been updated yet. So it still looked like you had signed it.
Could have been a caching issue.
Caching. Yeah, there you go, too. I just like to rag on Mongo.
So, that was cool. Yeah, you just passed me like a zipped .app file and unzipped it, and everything was good.
Yeah, I always forget how awesome it is when you see a native Mac application because you literally just download it to your apps folder. Or like you just drag it over to applications and bam, you've got it. It's nice that everything's all packaged. I actually don't know what is involved when people have to build an installer for things. Like I'm like,
They have to write to the registry. No. I bet you there's like, you know, there's different data directories and things like that.
Yeah, I assume that's what it does, is it basically just runs a setup script.
Yeah.
That if it's anything like the iOS startup, like you only have so many seconds before your application like gets killed, basically, when it's starting up. I don't know if the Mac works like that at all. I assume it doesn't, because you can, you know, if I want to say start, dang it. But so I've never looked into the installer stuff, so we didn't need to.
There might be separate rules for... I mean, there are separate rules for App Store apps and non-App Store apps, but that might be one of them.
Yeah, well, we might actually, this kind of brings us into the next thing that I worked on. I might actually eventually need to run something like that, though, a sort of installer package that would then drop this on there, because the way that you can rig up a thing, like if we want somebody's, when they boot up their Mac, for Chronic to launch on its own, a lot of times you package that into a helper application that is also installed. And then that's the thing that shows up in your user and login items or whatever. It would be like the Chronic helper. And it's basically the thing that kicks it all off initially. And I think a package installer would allow us to install both of those things basically at one time.
Do you know what those, like, do you know what people mostly use for those?
For what? Building a package installer?
Yeah.
No idea. Absolutely not. No. I mean, well, actually it's built in. It's one of the things you can build inside of Xcode. Like it's one of the project types on the Mac OS side of things. So
That's cool.
Might be something we have to do, but I actually did more on Chronic than just that, which is astounding. So I legitimately in 3 days probably put more work into Chronic than I had in the whole rest of the year, basically, because having a baby. But yeah, I want to use Swift UI. We talked about this in the last episode, but in order to do that, I had to change a couple things. I had to get the application building for 10.15 instead of 10.14, which was fine. But I was like, well, while I'm upgrading stuff, I might as well upgrade all the things. So I got us up to Swift 5 also, and then I upgraded the few dependencies that we have. So we use a thing called ReSwift, which is basically Redux for Mac applications, which I think for Mac applications, the flux data pattern is freaking amazing because we have so many different things that can rely on the same data and be updated in such an easy way, especially when we're working with like WebSocket stuff and we're just sending signals around and getting things done. So we use that, and then we use Apollo for messing with GraphQL stuff. So I had to upgrade those packages, and it's been a while, right? It's been a while.
Yeah,
so
Apollo on the Mac sucks, to be honest. Like it pulls down the whole schema and runs and auto generates a bunch of files and stuff.
Well, it does that on build. And yeah, correct. Really not that big of a deal. Like I kind of like having because what that gives you is it gives you type safety in your Swift code, which
when
is
I
nice.
Say it sucks,
I actually like it.
Yeah, I like it. But when I say it sucks, it's like, okay, what is that command I have to run? And like, it's probably just something that should go in the readme. And
it literally goes in the startup of the app. Like it goes, it's a build script for our application. So when you run command R or whatever to like rebuild the application after you change some Swift code, it goes and it runs that behind the scenes too.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, it must be different than the iOS stuff that I used. Actually, Swift UI makes me want to rewrite the iOS app in Swift. But
just go native.
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that, man.
You have to just look at all the Android people who can potentially eventually benefit from this. Unless you want to write a native Android app and then...
I've written a native Android app and it's actually not that bad, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Well then maybe, hey, who knows? Maybe
Except
React Native is going
to
go the way.
It's a bitch to maintain. I'm not going to
talk.
Yeah. Maintenance would be kind of crappy, but.
So I got all those things upgraded, and we are actually building for 10.15, which means I can start integrating SwiftUI. I had wanted to do that a little bit before we got here because I'm going to start working on our menu bar application, and I want to use SwiftUI for all of that stuff. But I unfortunately didn't have enough time to actually get it kicked off. So that's cool. My next step is I'm going to be pulling in SwiftUI and sort of getting those things rigged up and progressively getting rid of the couple storyboards that we have in the application. I've done most of the UI that is there that's going to get scrapped anyway is programmatically generated. Like I have some custom views in there that kind of show a workflow as it's been defined. So you can see which step you're on and that kind of stuff, which is all going to go away. But it was basically there for me to learn how to write custom views in old AppKit style.
Right.
And yeah, still stuff I need to know because SwiftUI utilizes AppKit under the hood still. But most of the visual components of things, SwiftUI is going to kind of do by itself.
So SwiftUI, when you're using SwiftUI, you don't use storyboards, correct?
You do not.
Can?
Well, there will be one storyboard, or it actually might be a zib. It kind of depends. But you'll use it to set up the menu for your application. Like that's actually all managed inside a zip file. I think that can be a storyboard. If you like were to go and boot up a brand new Mac app that is using SwiftUI, it will not give you a storyboard that has a window in it, for instance. Like, cause that's normally what would happen is if you would say, hey, I'm going to use storyboards, it would load a window into the storyboard and then you would set the default view controller for it and go from there. Mm-hmm. Now it's just like, nope, this is the one I'm going to build. And you know, everything is done in code, which is really nice because you can track it down and figure out like, why the heck is this like that? Oh, it's because a flag 16 levels deep inside of the storyboard is wrong. And oh, this auto layout constraint that was generated automatically inside my storyboard is wrong. Like, oh, those things are just a nightmare to find. So
I mean,
I'm sure once people got really used to them, it was great. But as a person who I come in and I work on a Mac app or I dabble with an iOS app, like those kind of things are just a nightmare to learn and remember, especially as they change them all the time.
Right. And also working with a team, those zip files are, and even storyboard files are kind of a pain in the ass to work with, like in Git source control and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. But that's what I accomplished over the last 2 weeks. And it doesn't sound like much, but it's like such a good groundwork for me to actually be able to go in and work on some new features that I'm very, very excited.
Yeah. And I like the fact that we're concentrating only on the menu bar app because we kind of have that design. And like, I remember, you know, we're like, what is the full screen experience like? We don't really have that down yet. So, and I think we'll get more info. Yeah, I have an idea, but I think we'll, as we start using the application, we'll find out more about like what that full screen should be.
Exactly. Cause I'm probably one of the weirder people in the sense that I prefer using a windowed version of the application most of the time over a menu bar application for almost any application. Like I just prefer the windowed version of it. And I think it's because I've gotten to the point where there's so many like, potentially so many menu bar icons that it drives me insane, which is why I use Bartender to hide them all anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that drove me to just being like, I like Windows and the UI that
I'm like in a window. Command tabbing into that. You know what I mean? Being able to command tab and do what it needs to do. But we should figure out the hotkeys for that stuff for Chronic at some point for the Mac app.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I've done that before.
Yeah. Cool.
You remember Hangover, that Mac app?
Mm-hmm.
That I never awesome. Actually, I never actually shipped, but I think I reserved the name in the Mac App Store, and then I submitted an empty application so they wouldn't take the name back. And they're like, "Yeah, this app doesn't do anything." And awesome. I thought it was pretty funny.
You want to be a Mac App squatter?
I was a Mac App squatter.
Yeah, I'm sure Chronic is taken. Cool, man. Anything else? Any other news?
The baby slept through the night last night, which was cool. So I'm pretty jazzed.
Like all
today.
The way through the night?
Not all the way. We still feed her like late at night, like 11 to midnight in that range, just to make sure she has enough food in her, basically, to like make it through the rest of the night. But she slept from like after that feeding until 7 a.m. this morning, which is the longest like continuous stretch of sleep that I've had for 7 months.
She gaining weight.
Not a ton, but she's gaining a little bit and she's just getting more and more efficient at eating all the time. So like she's learning how to take a bottle better. Now we actually have to deal with the fact that she's happens to just be a 7-month-old baby who's super curious. So it's like, I'm basically wrestling an alligator if I try to give her a bottle. And holy crap, that sucks. Like, I'm like, this baby's anorexic via ADD at this moment. You know, like, she's just not eating enough because she's too curious about other things around her. So that's a struggle that I'm currently trying to figure out. And it's probably driving Kendra more nuts than me since she has to nurse her. But yeah.
Oof. Also, being curious as a baby means putting everything in your mouth.
Yeah. Well, she's been doing that for forever. And it's pretty funny. So yeah, that's it for me, though.
On my side, I did a few shipped things. So I completed the new kind of newer UI layout for iOS side. So using the gradient and moving the controls around so they're more reachable with your finger and moving some of the data around. And I liked how that turned out.
Yeah, I think it looks super slick. It's very clean. Yeah. Is the way I would describe it.
And then the other thing that kind of went along with that is I upgraded. I'm very diligent on upgrading Expo because I don't want to get caught behind, because sometimes those upgrade paths are just a nightmare. Between, like, especially if you leave off some React Native stuff. So I've been upgrading as we go. And one of the upgrades changed how Expo handles the building of the React Native web. So Expo went ahead and, like, more deeply integrated React Native web into Expo so that they kind of have, like, a third official platform now. So it's now Android, iOS, and web. And we accomplished that before by just using React Native web, which is a project from, I think, Facebook. And that, all that allows you to do is use React Native components, but render them on the web. So if you use, like, a text component, it will turn into an input type equals text. Mm-hmm. We've been pretty diligent about keeping those separate because you can run into some issues and stuff around, like, doing that, like using React Native controls for the web. So a better pattern that we use, in my opinion, is we'll have the same file. Like, we might have the same component file, but you can use the extension of .native.js or .web.js, or you can even do .iOS.js or .android.js to kind of target those platforms individually if you need to. All that to say that the Expo build process of building the web changed a lot. So now it, like, starts an Expo server, and then behind the scenes starts a Webpack server, and then builds the web via that Webpack config that they have internally. And then that creates your application on a different port.
Okay.
And that kind of jacked all of our build of our website up that we use. We use Netlify. And so there's different directories that it goes to now, and, like, it pulls in, instead of pulling in stuff from public, it pulls in stuff from a web directory. So just different things that I had to learn, like what the changes were. And then so I had to fix that build for our website. So our Netlify build was broken for a little bit, but now it's back up and running. So I had to work on that. That took a few days to figure out.
Is that going to make the entire process a little easier moving forward, though, if, like, Expo is kind of the one entry point to booting all this stuff up?
I think so. So I haven't gotten that because the development experience is pretty similar. I am using Expo locally, and that's how the README is set up. But I don't think I'm fully taking advantage with, like, making a change and having Expo update the website and the iOS side at the same time, like using the file watcher stuff. Gotcha. That still happens, but, like, one is using file watcher, like, natively, and the other is just using Expo. So I think we can still combine that stuff. The documentation actually in Expo is kind of lagging and behind. So I had to look at source code and all that stuff. So that'll be improved, but fix that. And the thing I've been working on this week is the active background stuff. So
I'm very excited to hear about this.
Yeah, yeah. We talked last week about that. And I started over the weekend. Basically, what I did is build a whole new, just a simple web app that has HTML and JavaScript and CSS. It's not using any framework or anything like that. And it's using a Gaussian? How do you say that word?
Gaussian?
Gaussian blur. Yeah, effect on an image. And I have it so that it can auto blur. So it'll blur down from like 200% down to zero. So you have a clean image at the end. And I'm doing some timer stuff. So it kind of mimics what a user would see, kind of so you could see the effect. And it renders that image with the Gaussian effect on a canvas element. And then you can take that canvas element, convert that to a data URL, and now you have an image.
Oh, so that's the part. Clever. Nice. Yeah,
that's the part I'm working on now. And then, so I need to save those photos. I think I'm going to go all the way and upload them to S3 just so I can get that down.
You can do, we have a DigitalOcean Spaces account set up for Chronic stuff, and it uses the S3 API. So anything you would do for S3, you can just use the, you just have to sub out what your like S3 URL is to point to our Spaces stuff. Because that's where our Elixir builds actually go to when we build the tarball that is like Chronic server 0.19 to 0.0 or whatever. It goes up to there and then we pull that stuff down later. So I can get you set up with that if you'd like.
Cool. Yeah. But then the next thing that I'm going to need your help with, once I have all these pieces together, I want to show you and say, okay, how can we turn this into a process? Like, how can we turn this into like an app that we can just, you know, have an API to that we just sub out and then that creates all these images? And actually the only images, so I'm thinking it's only going to have one image, but then during the running of Chronic, of this specific Pomodoro or specific timer, there's going to be a bunch of images it gets received. So for every second, there's going to be a URL. Now, and then that URL will contain both the combination of the gradient and the image. So there is going to be a process part.
Oh, okay. I guess I was thinking we would do this on device as much as possible.
The problem is you can't really do it on device, on all the devices we target. Because like I looked up like the Apple Watch stuff, obviously you can't do that with there. I don't think they have a web part that can be in the background. And we can talk about this. Maybe it is, maybe our first iteration is on device. But I would like to talk to you about like how we can get it as a service, because I don't think creating those images, generating those images, they take like a second to generate all of them. And I don't think storing them on S3 and then deleting them from that bucket as soon as the Pomodoro is over is that big of a deal.
Yeah, I guess my thing is all about transitioning from one image to the other. I assumed we would do it on device so that that could be fluid, but I think it'll be chunkier if it's request image A, request image B.
Yeah, so I think there's some process here where you start the Pomodoro, right? And you immediately get the initial image URL. And that kicks off the process. And then there'll be events that are streamed in that say, okay, here's a new image. Here's a new image. And it's for, you know, second number 3,540 or something. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And then here's that. And then the device is going to have to preload those images, because obviously we don't want to load those images right away. So it might like preload like the next five or something and keep that in a rotating.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they're preloaded and cached locally so that they can see them right away. Just some things I thought about, but I would like to sit down and think of a plan. So I'm pretty close to kind of showing you what that looks like and seeing what you think. There's also like some sort of memory leak on Chrome, but anyway,
solid.
Yeah. It works fine on Safari, and then Chrome is like, doesn't like set interval. It's nothing to do with processing. It's like mimicking that. So So that's about it. So my next steps are to get that image from the canvas saved and then talk to you about creating a process for that. So
nice.
Sounds could maybe good. Use some serverless functions for this. Maybe I'm thinking anyway.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, you could, yeah. I'll be curious to see what we end up doing with
right.
this.
Like, how do you create a process that, like, how do you get a canvas? You're calling into a server. So how do you get a canvas object to render the CSS? Like, could we do something like Phantom.js or something mm-hmm. on the server? I don't know yet. So those are the questions that are.
This would be a useful thing just to figure out in general.
Yeah.
Like there are, I have not messed with canvas at all, really. In the years and years and years that it's existed, but there are a lot of things that I think of and I'm like, oh, that could be really cool. On just a little ideas like this idea right here of having an image and then like setting a certain amount of blur to it and getting it back. Like mm-hmm. that could be a useful thing just to use if you just want to create a blurry image just kind of randomly, right? Like you're just like, oh, I just need a thing here. Let me
there is a service. There is a service I found. I can't remember the name of it, but it's literally like, give us some CSS mm-hmm. and we'll render that as an image. So you can like pass it HTML and CSS, and the result of that will be an image.
Gotcha.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. I built when I was working at Squaremouth, I built a Go web service that did that with, to build like PDFs and stuff.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Just using like Wicked HTML to PDF behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not using Pandoc. I think Wicked uses Pandoc.
No, I don't think no, was not using Pandoc.
Oh, I did kind of a similar thing as well with PDFs.
Well, it was funny. Like when I built it, cause I built it in Go, like it was the first microservice that we deployed in Go at Squaremouth. I don't know if they use any other services in Go now, but I built it in Go because we had a problem with Wicked HTML to PDF in Ruby land. And that was like causing a memory leak.
Mm.
And so I just wrote it in Go and, ended up not having a memory leak and it was stupidly fast even over the web. But I was talking to a guy from Reverb when I was at Windy City mm-hmm. Rails. They had literally built the same thing like the month prior. Wow. And so I was like, oh, that's funny. We both did the exact same thing, like two Ruby shops who were just like, oh, we'll just go build this small Go web app to handle this crap. And that was pretty funny.
That's funny.
I think I tried to open source that and then never made its way out.
It's kind of weird that doesn't exist as a service.
Oh, it does. It was just too expensive, so I wrote my own.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like there's one called like T-Rex maybe or something like that, or PDF Rex, something with a Rex in there that was like pretty expensive though. And I'm like, Wicked HTML to PDF is open source, and I basically just need to exec this sucker from inside of a web server, so not a big deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was pretty fun, but. Cool. I'm excited though. I want to see the demo now though, is I don't know that I'm going to be patient enough to be able to wait until you think it's ready. I want to see this app thing like right
like,
now.
Give me like another day.
Okay.
And it'll be a cooler demo.
Cool.
I should show you the effect though to make sure. It's kind of like a simple effect that I chose.
Yeah.
Just for now, but that's one of those things that can be subbed out to whatever effect, like, especially if you're working with a canvas. You can draw whatever you want on a canvas. So
mm-hmm.
So that'll be cool.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited. Do we have anything else to talk about?
I don't, man. I don't.
You have no other exciting things going on?
I don't. It's all chronic, man, for the rest of the year. I'm still off of social media. I have. I did cheat once.
I'm yeah, not, I'm like, I'm saw I that. Saw some definite tweets that were like, he had to have read something.
Oh, so I'm using drafts. I'm using drafts to tweet now.
Did you say giraffes or drafts?
Drafts. D-R-A-F-T-S.
Like the long-necked animal.
No, like the first revision.
Okay, drafts. Okay.
Drafts. Sorry.
I can't hear. And then I was going through in my own joke while you were explaining it, so I didn't hear you again.
You never heard of drafts, the app?
No, I know what drafts is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm using drafts to just tweet so I don't read. I'm still I want to take an afternoon and build a write-only Twitter, but...
Yeah, call it giraffes, by the way.
Giraffes, I should.
There you go, giraffes.
All right, sounds good, man.
All right, dude. I will talk to you in tomorrow, probably, but we will record again in a couple weeks.
All right. Sounds good,
good
man.
Good chat. Bye.
Bye.